From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway, an opportunity for us to give you a little bit of commentary on the news media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, the editor of the Times Union, here with this fine crew. Next to me is Kaylin Brown, professor at the College of St. Rose in Albany. Wonderful to see you.
Good day.
Good day. And then there's Ira Fussfeld, now publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, and Associated Publications.
That would be me, thank you. You'll have to talk louder. I forgot to put the earphones on.
Yes. I'll shout.
Okay,
how's that? All right. And Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, who's way down at the end of the table in this studio, so we generally have to shout to so that he can hear.
I never put those things in, and I have them, and they were very expensive, I want you to know.
Very expensive.
So, I don't.
So this is a pitch for dollars, 1-800-323-9262.
That's right.
So that's very good. See, I can do that without a cue. How about that?
Well, there is sort of a hypnotic, if you listen to the station for more than 3 minutes, number gets into
it
your
does.
Head.
It does.
It's like humming a tune. You can't get it out of your head.
It's tricky when you're driving, especially.
Well, I must say, I know that you all consider all the Trump stories to be diversionary and we shouldn't pay so much attention.
Yeah, that yourself all the time. You point out that it's all designed to distract us from the real news of the day.
We call this gorilla dust.
Gorilla dust, yes.
But I, on the other hand, am so taken with the testimony, and I admit this, I am so taken with the testimony of the newest mistress who we are hearing about.
His mistress.
Who is now describing in intimate detail what his sexual habits were when he was with her. And talking about he was boring and he only was in one position and all. It was all in the
paper. Is this The Media Project?
All in the paper?
Wait a second. Now,
what paper do you think it was in?
That's exactly what we're talking about, isn't it? It's The Media Project, and the whole idea here is what do people pay attention to and what do they want? Now, why are you blushing?
Well, but this story has gotten precious little coverage now that you think of it. I mean, can you imagine any other president leading up to Trump? If there was this kind of story, it would be all over the papers and the media. And with Trump, it's just another brick on the load. We're barely paying attention.
Now, what would my friend Elliot Spitzer be thinking? I mean, here's Spitzer. He had to resign his governorship because he had to do with prostitutes and all the rest of it. And here's Trump who's outdoing him, and nobody's saying spit.
Do they say whether or not he's wearing socks?
Well, they are saying something because we are talking about it now as a result of hearing about it from the various media outlets.
Here, let me throw it in.
That's correct. I mean, there is coverage. It's not as though we don't know that. What's her name? Not Chastity.
Stormy Daniels.
That's is what the name she went by. And
interesting that you know that.
The allegation is that she was given a $130,000 settlement just before the 2016 election and as a result stopped her planned cooperation with various media outlets who had interviewed her, who were going to put together a story. So without her continuing collaboration with those media outlets, the story never got out until now, right?
Or the possibility that somebody somewhere took a fall that they should not have taken. In other words, Rex, you're always the guy who's talking about media ethics and what we ought to be doing. And it does sound a little shady to me, the whole thing.
Well, I don't think that she was dealing with the Washington Post here.
ABC.
It is interesting. Oh, really? Well, it is interesting that, of course, this evokes memories of what happened to Michael Isikoff in Newsweek at the dawn of the Clinton scandal. That story about the president's alleged affair, at that time alleged, with an intern, was ready to go at Newsweek, and Newsweek decided to shelve the story reported by investigative reporter Michael Isikoff. It is unclear entirely, and what happened, though, was that the word leaked out to Michael Drudge. And when Drudge first put this bulletin, Matt Drudge, sorry.
He's a right winger, right?
College with Mike Drudge. Yes, Matt Drudge, of course, has his right wing website. And we all thought at the time, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. And very quickly, it turned out that Drudge really had the story. And it became, of course, the impeachment of Bill Clinton. So that story got out there, but it was inappropriately shelved by a reputable news organization. And so you do have to wonder, to Alan's point, if this was a bad decision on the part of ABC News or whomever.
Well, Fox News allegedly shelved this story, this specific story.
You mean the Trump story? It's
Trump and Stormy Daniels. Yeah. And their spokesman acknowledged having shelved it. And their explanation was that they just didn't feel they had the story nailed down yet.
Now, of which course, could these, be true, but you
could
know, with
be
Fox,
true. And then
you
the
never
skeptics
know.
Would say that they didn't want to sully Trump by running that story.
Well, that's a good argument
that they didn't have it nailed down.
Yeah. Yeah.
If they said they didn't have it nailed down, then they're adhering to the standards
right.
of journalism. So,
you are so naive. I mean,
I am not.
Yes, you are. There you go again. First of all, I believe I'm more in the Gaullist tradition of everybody's guilty until proven innocent, and so I gotta say. This is naive. That Fox, of all people, Fox had the story and they, quote, didn't have it nailed down, so they didn't use it. Are you kidding?
She's saying maybe. Yeah. And I just
if that's the fact.
Right.
If the fact is that it wasn't nailed down, that is justification for not publishing or broadcasting a
well,
story.
Well, of course, but how do we know? And this is why I say you're hopelessly naive on all of this.
Let me say she is not naive. She is of good heart, but she is not naive. I know this woman.
And naive I'm not.
You're not.
I was a reporter for a long time. I live with college students day in and day out.
Okay, I'll test you.
Uh-oh.
What do you think of me?
What do I think of you?
Yeah, you see, now we'll know whether you're
naive. I think you need more sunshine in your life, Alan.
Okay, if you want to join this conversation, media at WAMC.org, and here are a couple of readers who have just done that. Here is a question from John in Highland, New York. He signs his letters JD/MBA, so beware.
Oh, boy.
Great show this week, says John. As someone who cares but often feels in the dark about the local and school board level news, I often wonder why there is no reporting on it. Maybe given the importance of this information to the public and the need for more skilled journalists, maybe state and county college programs are the answer. It's not hard or expensive to live stream and or record these local meetings. And if every student in Introduction to Journalism is required to attend, record, and report on these things for credit, we could improve things a lot for little or no cost.
I commend John to Pine Hills blog at timesunion.com,
where you
can see local coverage of public meetings in Albany, New York.
Absolutely.
It is a minor effort. It is a drop in the bucket of all that needs to be done. But certainly at the College of St. Rose, we are trying to train our journalists to attend public meetings and be the eyes and ears for the public.
Well, a couple of things here. First of all, I've seen all the crocodile tears from all of you in which you persistently say, well, the advertising money's down. We don't have the money to cover these the way that we used to, and so we don't. And a second thing I want to say is I love going through the channels on my cable system and coming to the educational meetings, and they play every school board meeting. You want to talk about
public access channel?
Yeah,
yeah.
But let's not sidestep that business about the finances. I mean, my newspaper covered the school board in Highland, much to my consternation, often because Highland, which is in southern Ulster County, we sold precious few papers there. But the Poughkeepsie Journal, which is right across the river in Dutchess County, did cover those meetings. So the meetings were being covered. I can't talk about what Poughkeepsie is doing now because I don't know. But certainly, we're no longer covering them because of the reasons that Alan just pointed out mockingly. There's not enough money to have people out there.
To have enough reporters to cover everything. We cover fewer school boards than we used to as well. And so, I mean, this is a great idea, I think, by John, that we get students engaged. And that's why we are really pleased to have the College of St. Rose students do it. Alan, you did this with the Legislative Gazette for many years.
Mm-hmm,
you had
indeed.
Students who were covering the New York State Legislature, though there were many other people covering at that time and still are, about 30 reporters in the New York State Capitol. But still, I think giving students practical experience, it's just that it's not journalism is not as simple as putting a camera on a board and saying you therefore have coverage.
I was just going to say that the idea to have students or somebody who is a non-professional, quote unquote, do this kind of coverage makes a lot of sense on a lot of levels. On the other hand, they often will bring back copy that is raw and needs a lot of work and takes a lot of time to work on. Sure. And that's another thing that we don't have a lot of time to do anymore.
You know, back in the day, I got my first and only, I believe, sabbatical. And the topic was why the New York State Legislature needed to be covered on TV. And I remember the late Stanley Steingut, which is why I can tell this story now, the speaker saying to me, but who would pay for it? Well, of course they pay for it now. And of course, both the Senate and the Assembly, on the rare times they're in session, are there. And I try to watch, and it's almost impossible because the whole thing is such a loaded game. All the decisions have already been made by the time they get there onto the floor.
Exactly.
And they make them in caucus. And
which is why you have to have professional reporters there who have sources who can go behind the scenes to get what's really going on.
And provide the kind of context that you're talking
about. The context, exactly. So here's another reader, Rich in Hyde Park. Writes to us to ask more about academic journalism, really. He said he just heard a comment that blew his mind and he'd like to hear about it. Ralph Nader on his radio program was interviewing Ralph Wilson, who's been exposing the Koch family pay-to-play influence in our colleges and universities. At the end of the show, there was a casual discussion, Rich says, about the Florida State school newspaper. The comment that blew my mind, he says, was when Ralph Wilson said that the school newspaper was bought by Gannett and that students still work on the paper. Is this a normal or widespread practice? Is this not a problem for journalism education? I am not familiar with student newspapers being bought by newspaper chains, but it's not actually that surprising, and it may not be such a terrible thing. If you have financial support from a wealthy owner, your newspaper may actually be stronger than it would be if you had to just exist by students selling advertising.
Well, let's assume that Gannett, in Caitlin's wonderful way of saying things, subscribes to journalistic ethics, so what's so bad? They might be doing right. But on the other hand, if it's the Koch brothers who bought the newspaper, that's a whole other story, right?
I am unfamiliar with this. I'll look into it. But I do think that there's value in having students delivering content if the content isn't coming from somewhere else. At least they're getting trained on how to form a story and report a story and get information out to the public.
Yeah. Now, the Legislative Gazette, which Rex thankfully just mentioned, is 40 years old right now. And I invented it all those years ago. It has a professional editor. But, you know, it's been around for 40 years now. And like all other, you know, enterprises, it shows the same kinds of strains. It went from being published every week in newspaper form to being online. But interestingly, it's more attractive to students than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
The online version.
Yes.
Digital.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's significant. You're exactly right. It has the same financial pressures that confronted the professional media, but it's an important educational experience, and I think it's a great thing. I think student publications generally don't substitute for professional, just because the experience and training that professional journalists have gotten really does make a difference in your capacity to report really well. But it's a really, as Caitlin says, it's a really great thing to have in the absence of anything.
But think about this, Durex. I'm sorry for interrupting, but 40 years later...
Mm-hmm.
And you should see where those kids are. I mean, these are major forces. One of them is probably the best gossip columnist in the New York Post.
Well, there you go.
for example.
Professor Shartok is so proud.
Yeah.
Who is that?
Andrea Pizer.
Andrea Pizer, I think, who was a correspondent at the Daily Freeman at one time.
We had our students at the Legislative Gazette, and they had good experiences there. It was a useful experience for them. We were grateful for that.
That's very kind of you.
All right. Very good thing. All right. We're all going to... Ouch. Oh, boy. My arm hurts from the back padding here. Okay. So we do need to say a word about the president's fake news awards. Of course, this was all delivered by Twitter. The president claiming all kinds of winners. CNN, 4 victories, The New York Times, 2, and ABC, The Washington Post, Time, and Newsweek. So it's basically just a list of the president's grievances, stories that he didn't like that were about him, right?
Some of them had errors in them. There were examples. He was pointing to instances when he had been legitimately mischaracterized, whether it was intentional or not on the part of the journalists. He has a reason to criticize them. To me, the fake news awards are simply this. They're a wake-up call to journalism that it must be more careful than ever to be accurate. accuracy
well,
is critical.
Well, that's one thing. And, of course, for those of us who had the pleasure of seeing Senator Flake on the air giving his major address on how dangerous it is in a democracy when leaders would take us down the wrong path by going after the press. And I tell you, Flake is a Republican. Of course, he's retiring, and that does tell you something about what's going on. But I thought he was extraordinarily courageous and on the money, and I'm sure every journalism award which can be awarded is going to be awarded to this guy who did this story in the United States Senate. But one of the ones that he gave an award to, somebody that I've interviewed, it had to do with the New York Times. He gave an award to the New York Times. And that was because their columnist, Paul Krugman, who I've interviewed and who I have great respect for, said that the economy would never recover from this guy. Well, right now, the economy, as we speak today, has just shot through yet another mark. And the response from the Krugman supporters is, hey, we're not done yet. Well, what goes up comes down.
Exactly. And Trump is upset about an opinion columnist offering an opinion. This is not the same thing as fake news. It's not the same thing as the White House lying repeatedly over and over and over again.
Right.
We have documented, that is, the Washington Post has documented 2,000 direct lies that the president has uttered since taking office. That is, actual contraventions of the truth. And as Caitlin points out, when there are mistakes made by the media, we do try to correct them. And
which Flake pointed out.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And saying that politicians don't do that.
Exactly. Senator Flake mocked Kellyanne Conway for that phrase, alternative facts. You know, isn't it something like this? He said this, Mr. President, every word that a president utters projects American values around the world. The values of free expression and a reverence for the free press have been our global hallmark. For it's our ability to frequently air the truth that keeps our government honest and keeps the people free. Between the mighty and the modest, truth is the great leveler. And so respect for freedom of the press has always been one of our most important exports. So let's hear it for Jeff Flake for those potent words. Now, the question is, there are two things. First, Flake is giving up his seat because he's so politically vulnerable after standing up to the president. And second, he does vote with the White House 90% of the time. So if he really wants to take on the White House, there are other ways to do it.
It's been said that he's thinking about running for president, so he may not be disappearing.
Well, you have to win a primary. 80% of the Republican Party are heavily for Trump. So it's going to be very tough for a guy like Jeff Flake to win a Republican primary, unless, of course, something happens.
There's
like
a lot of time.
An impeachment or something of that kind happens, or a Mueller report, which seriously damages the president.
Now, do you three believe that the media, and I haven't seen how it's been covered, should give serious coverage and prominent coverage to these fake news awards?
No.
The coverage I saw was pretty much tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
They're acknowledging it because, again, it was another move the president made, and so they feel an obligation to cover what the president decided to do. I was especially heartened by the fact that once the tweet came out, there was a link in the tweet to the Republican National Convention that was an error message to all the people that crashed the Republican National Committee's site. So I found that funny and appropriate for what was being said by the president.
So we moved now to another question, again, involving the president, and that is the use of this word. We haven't addressed that on this show yet, so we really ought to just take a moment to say the word the president allegedly used in the Oval Office, which initially the White House did not deny that the president used the word. Then later, the president personally denied it on Twitter, and then the whole controversy began. Did he really say it? But the general notion was that he did say it. That was what seems to have initially been supported, and a lot of media decided to actually publish the word. Some did not. So that's sort of one of the questions. The news director of WNYC, Jim Schachter, who used to be at the New York Times for many years, said that one of his primary professional challenge of the moment was whether or not to use that word. So, Alan, you decided not to, right?
Well, we use the initial. You know, we said S as opposed to the excrement, full excrement word. Because, you know, I'm responsible. And this gets to something we've talked about many times here. Newspapers are not controlled by the government. But in fact, the FCC does govern what we say on our station. And they can take our license away if we say it. Now, there was some interesting discussion at the beginning as to whether he said it or not. And whether he said something else or not. So I thought, listen, nobody's naive. Everybody knows exactly what the word was. And I went out of my way to point out it was a substitute for excrement and that everybody understood the S word. And so I decided it wasn't worth a fine, maybe of $300,000 per 29 stations, which would put us out of business.
Well, you're not really going to be fined. That's a dodge. You're not going to be fined for quoting the president. I think that you really need to own up to journalistic standards the same way that we did.
Yes, but again, Rex, with your pomposity, I just want to point out...
They are not going to fine you for quoting the president.
I just want to point out that newspapers are not controlled by the FCC.
We are not, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's watch that sneering tone of yours.
Newspapers don't have that worry, but they do have to be concerned about what the reader's reaction is going to be, and is this proper for the family newspaper? I think this was a very easy decision for newspapers to make compared to a lot of similar decisions
Indeed.
We've made in the past. The president said it, and it's part of the dialogue, and it belongs in the newspaper.
And the Daily News' decision to refigure its headline and say S for brains.
Right, S blank blank T for brains.
That was absolutely the best deviation or play on words, I think, making fun of our president.
The Daily News we know and love. Yes, yes. It's actually interesting because it went all over the place. The Daily News didn't use it. The Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post, and the New York Times did.
Including on its editorial page.
And CNN, right?
CNN,
yes,
prominently.
Use the actual word. We did. The Times Union, I authorized the use of the word in the lead of the story.
Now let's remember that CNN and NPR, both of which used it, are not regulated by the FCC.
Correct.
The stations that buy their services are. So there's a big difference.
But now let me add one other thing. I think that we all got so engulfed with this very discussion that we're having now that the most important part of that whole episode was the sentiment, whether or not you use the word and whether or not the word is house or whole. What he said about these countries almost got lost in the debate about which did he use, as whole, as house. Should we have used it? Should we not have used it? Doesn't matter what he said. Even if he had said something clean, he said something ridiculously detrimental about these countries.
And Jim Acosta from CNN tried to hold him to it and said, Mr. President, do you believe that only white people should be coming into the country or not? And Acosta, in true form, badgered the president on whether or not he was a racist, essentially, without saying that. And the president booted him from the room. He said, out.
Well, the context of that, though, is it was at the end of one of these gaggles, and they were already starting to clear people, and they were clearing people, and then Acosta did that, and he said, out. Because they were already supposed to have been cleared out.
He's just lucky he didn't say, as he has in the past, beat him up.
We live in unprecedented times.
Are our listeners familiar with the term gaggle, Ira? Do you know?
Other than on Thanksgiving? I know.
It's just interesting. I read a whole chapter about the gaggle
I don't know the origin of it.
By a scholar by the name of Kumar, who wrote about the messaging for the president. I'm working on an article about that. And the gaggle, while I don't know the origin, it's the moment early in the day when the press has an opportunity to work with the press secretary or representative of the president to get a conversation going about what sort of coverage might be expected for the day. And this precedes the daily briefing, which happens later in the day.
But doesn't it come from a gaggle? You also get a gaggle when you have several, like a photo gaggle, right? When they're doing a photo shoot and the reporters ask a question. That's a gaggle.
But the origination was gaggle of geese, wasn't it?
Well, yes.
Gaggle of geese. Right? That's where it comes from.
Is that the term, really? Like murder of crows.
It's worth remembering that there is somewhat of a collegial relationship between the White House press corps and the press secretary's office, except when they're having that daily briefing, which is now televised, which I think not only means that they're all going to each other's corners to perform, but one side has to be a tougher and the other side has to be more inquisitive as opposed to just trying to get some information here.
Okay, we all have to play our roles then. And in that, our role is over for this week. Yeah, it's true. The Media Project has ended. Kaylin Brown, Ira Fussfeld, Alan Shartok, and Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us. Our producer, David Gustine, is back in the room to shut us off.
If I have said anything to offend any of you, particularly Kaylin or you, Rex, I won't apologize.
If?
No comment.
All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the bill. Now, publishers are such interesting people.
Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.